Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, the Chupacabra, UFOs, aliens, Area 51, conspiracies, unsolved crimes, the supernatural. Are they real or are they figments? With your hosts, Colleen and Eddie Medina.
Good evening and welcome to Figments, the podcast where we talk about the unknown and the unexplained. I am your host, Colleen Medina, and with me is my handsome hubby, Eddie Medina.
She's paid to call me handsome hubby, just to let you know.
Well, when am I getting paid? When do I get that money?
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm. And tonight is the night before Halloween.
Ooh. Well, you're listening to this on Halloween night.
Yes, but we're recording the night before Halloween.
Okay.
It's okay to say that.
The man behind the curtain bit, they don't need to know that.
Okay.
The great and powerful Oz is just some Fred Mertz reject. You know, they're supposed to believe that Oz... we're back. And this is week number four of our big Halloween month of all spooky cases for Figments.
Ooh,
and a first.
Spooky.
This is the first time in our long history of Figments, all long 14 episodes, that we've actually done four episodes in 1 month. So this is a first for us. So maybe we'll just keep the momentum going and do a new episode every week. What do you say, Colleen?
I say Colleen. No, I say...
Wow.
I say we should do that. I've been telling you for years that we should do that.
Okay.
Well, do you ever want to listen to me? No.
Well, why should I? I'm still behind paying you, so why should I even...
Exactly. So why don't you tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about tonight?
Well, this being Halloween night and all, we decided to kind of have a fun episode because we've been hitting you with the heavy all month long, and we figured instead of topping off the month with yet another heavy topic, let's just kind of dial it down and do something fun. So what we're doing is a Legend of Sleepy Hollow themed episode.
I love the Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah. It's like one of the ultimate ghost stories. Not the ultimate ghost story.
It is my favorite Halloween story. Absolutely. Hands down. Mm-hmm. Heads off. I mean, what?
That was good. I like that.
Thank you.
Ad-libbing.
Yes.
Do we pay you for that? But yeah, we're not going to discuss the legend itself of the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, but we're going to have a little bit more fun with it. What we're doing is talking about our favorite TV and movie adaptations of the story of the Legend of Sleepy Hollow. That's a lot of ofs.
Mm-hmm. By Washington Irving.
So...
Let me just say that The Legend of Sleepy Hollow was first published in 1820.
Long
time ago.
Colleen is not just, Googling this information. She actually knows her stuff when it comes to Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And it was found among the papers of who again, Colleen? The story itself?
Diedrich Knickerbocker.
Yeah, I always want to say Nick Knickerbocker.
Knickerbocker. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, so...
It's one of my favorite words to say.
So this was something that Washington Irving wrote, and I guess he didn't even publish it during his lifetime. This was found later after his death, I suppose. Is that what it is?
I guess.
Well, you're the expert, woman.
Okay. Not by anyone else's standards.
Yeah. It's going to be similar to our format that we did for the Urban Legends, where we each take a turn and discuss our favorites, our favorite adaptations. Who should go first? You want to go first? Should I go first? You go first? You go first.
I'll go first.
You go first. Okay. Take it away.
I'll start with the TV series Murder, She Wrote, starring Angela Lansbury. Don't laugh.
Wow. Nobody saw that one coming. I guarantee you.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I started with it. Hey, I like Murder, She Wrote.
That's fine.
And I think Angela Lansbury, think about her accomplishments. A whole different story.
Yeah, she's quite the woman.
Dame Angela Lansbury.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an episode in 1987, Murder, She Wrote, called The Night of the Headless Horseman. And it starred, who I think you pronounce his name, Tom. It's T-H-O-M. Tom Bray.
Yeah, I did not pronounce it Tom.
Yeah.
I pronounced it Thom.
Yeah.
Like Thor.
Well, yeah.
Brother of Thor, Thom.
Or brother of Rom from Star Trek, Thom.
Oh, when you say Rom, I think Rom Space Knight, the toy from the 80s or 70s. Anyway, so Thom and Angela team up for the first time in TV history.
And he plays the Ichabod Crane character. Now, their names are completely different in the show. They don't even resemble each other, the original names.
Yeah.
And then,
which is good. I mean, you know, because Murder, She Wrote is set more in the real world. So
right.
It would be unlikely that there would be an Ichabod Crane type character called Ichabod.
And then Barry Williams plays Brom.
Oh.
And then, and he did a really good job.
I kind of remember that, yeah, yeah.
And then a girl named Carlene Crockett plays the Katrina character.
Yeah.
And we've seen her in, I guess, a few things. So it takes place at this, I think it's a boys' school. The school is known for the horses, the horse riding.
So the extracurricular activity at the school is horse riding. That's like their main focus.
Yeah, that's the main
focus. So it's almost like a private school
slash magnet school
where
for boys.
Okay, gotcha.
And I believe Brom is the horse riding instructor.
Yeah.
So
the Brom character, which is Barry Williams?
Yes.
I almost said Barry White.
Exactly.
Probably would have been better with Barry White.
Anyway, so the Ichabod Crane character, he, of course, is in love with the Katrina character. It's Dorian is Ichabod Crane.
Yeah.
And then I believe Sarah is the Katrina character.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dorian, he's adopted, so he doesn't have any parents. He gets Jessica to come visit him.
He doesn't even have adoptive parents?
I think they might be gone.
Oh, okay.
And he gets Jessica to come visit him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was saying that it was an emergency, so of course she stopped what she was doing and took the train over there.
Okay, so, right there, it's already a bad idea when you're inviting Jessica Fletcher to your town.
I know.
It's like wherever that woman goes, it's like the plague. She shows up, people start dying. I mean,
yeah.
if I was around, if Jessica Fletcher came around, I would be hightailing it out of there. I mean, death follows that lady like the Grim Reaper or something.
If you were accused of one of the murders? Would you want her around then?
My luck, I would be the one to drop dead. I wouldn't be the accused.
Well, how are they going to have a Murder, She Wrote series if she's not in all the episodes trying to solve murders? I mean, come on.
Actually, if there's
everyone always says that, but it's like,
I would watch a Murder, She Wrote that didn't have Angela Lansbury. I'm kidding.
I think there's a couple that actually don't have her.
That's weird.
So anyway, she arrives. She thinks that she's there just visiting Dorian, but someone addresses her as his mom, and she's like, "What?" And so as they were riding on to the boys' school, he tells her that he is telling people that she's his mom because he was wanting to introduce his mom to this girl, Sarah, that he's in love with. And I guess with his family, it's all about like stature and all that kind of stuff. And so he doesn't really have any.
So they wouldn't look highly on someone who doesn't have parents.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
As if he could help that.
Exactly, it's not his own fault.
Yeah.
So anyway, and of course, Jessica, there's a moment.
Yeah, I
where
just thought of something. If they wanted to really throw us for a loop, they instead of having Jessica Fletcher show up as his mom, they should have went like Miss Doubtfire style and had like Barry Williams show up dressed as his mom and like do the whole Miss Doubtfire bit. You know
what? Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh!
It's the wine talking.
Okay. Anyway, so there's a point where she was thinking about telling Sarah whenever she meets her that she's not her mom. But of course, Jessica being Jessica, she's just saying, "Oh, yes, it's a pleasure to meet you. And I've heard a lot about you," and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so while they're there at the boys' school, things started happening. And right away, you could see that Barry Williams, who plays the Brom character. What was his name in the show? Nate. Nate was his name.
Okay.
He and Dorian, of course, have the same chemistry. He's the bully and Dorian's being picked on.
Yeah.
And
it's hard to imagine Greg Brady as a bully.
But he kind of has...
he's such a dork.
He kind of has, you know, after he got older, he kind of had a voice to be able to carry that off. Or carry that...
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. And...
Well, I could see him playing like a creeper or like a serial killer because he's got like those creeper eyes.
Yeah, I was going to say there's something about his eyes, too.
Yeah.
So, you see...
So, right away, you kind of get the impression that this is a Sleepy Hollow... inspired story. You're thinking, oh, I wonder who the Headless Horseman's going to be in this
episode. Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, if the name Knight of the Headless Horseman didn't...
I know,
tell
but
you
right
enough,
away they're like being obvious as to which one's going to be lopping off heads.
Exactly. So, as the show goes on, you could see that Dorian and Nate are getting into it. And so then, I guess we're going to do spoiler alerts.
I don't think a whole lot of Figment listeners are going to be upset. If you spoil Murder, She Wrote. And Murder, She Wrote from, like, what, 25 years ago?
That is so wrong. But anyway,
I think it's right.
Okay. Well, I apologize for spoiling this for anyone who's interested.
Please don't unsubscribe.
All of those one people out there that are interested.
Your mom.
Yeah. So they find Nate's body with his head chopped off. And I thought
The bully's head chopped. Okay, that's a cool twist.
That is a twist. Like, and
not Shalaman style.
Yeah, I thought that was cool because, yeah. So, and I thought, oh, that's kind of harsh for Murder, She Wrote, but, you know.
It's got murder in the title. What's so harsh about it?
True. So, and then Jessica realizes that his boots are on the wrong feet.
Oh,
and, of course, she's the only one that notices that and everything. And Doug McClure is the sheriff, and... I've always liked everything.
Again, it would have been really cool at this point in the story if they took his boots off and to discover that his actual feet were reversed. You know, left foot on the right.
What is happening to your brain tonight?
Sorry.
Oh my gosh, are you just...
I don't know.
You're still exhausted from last night.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so anyway, sorry for that.
And I've always loved Doug McClure, everything
he's
been in.
He's awesome.
He was really good. And it's funny, the couple of times that Dorian thinks that he sees Nate... dressed up as the Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
The first time was some of the boys from the school, and they had a pumpkin, and so as Dorian, they were chasing him, of course, across the bridge.
Yeah.
That bridge that's in, what'd you say, that it's in all of these different shows and stuff? Is it the same setting?
I was asking if it's the bridge they use, like, in Little House on the Prairie and all the Disney...
Probably.
Like, the Disney movies, like...
Because I think most of those are set.
Pollyanna and all those.
Yeah.
Like, it's always the same bridge. In fact, I was just watching a Kolchak the other day where it opens up at a bridge. I was like, that's that same bridge. It must be like on the Universal lot or
something. That's what I was saying.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it's a bridge in Sleepy Hollow. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
or in
just
this town.
Looks exactly the same.
Or in Dorian's hometown.
And those couple of trees that are planted there happen to be planted in the exact same spot.
Yeah.
So they see him. He's walking out at night by himself, and these boys are playing a trick on him, and they dress up as a Headless Horseman, have a pumpkin, and he starts running, so they throw the pumpkin at him.
Did they hit him in the crotch with it?
Yes.
Oh, I gotta see this. I gotta see this.
And you find that out later. And then
that he got hit in the crotch?
The other time that he thinks that he sees the Headless Horseman, it's actually, or he thinks it's Nate dressed up, and it's actually the killer.
Okay, I get it now, sorry. I started to get lost for a second.
Maybe if you'd stop interrupting me. So anyway, I thought that was a good twist.
Yeah.
A neat little story, and I like how they... I like how none of the names were similar to the original names.
Are you not going to give the full spoilerage where you say who the killer was?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. So, that means you, the listener, have to go. This is your assignment. Go on Netflix or get a bootleg off of YouTube because, everyone's bootlegging Murder, She Wrote. It's in high demand. And so,
you know, Angela Lansbury is going to listen to this podcast, and she's going to call you.
As we discovered last week, never know who's going to be listening to this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't put it past it to Angela Lansbury to get pissed off at us this coming week.
Yeah. Right.
So that's cool. That's cool. That's a neat twist. So what we're going to do is rate these on a scale of five, up at the top scale being five severed heads. Now, out of five severed heads, how many severed heads would you give this?
I would give it 4 out of 5 severed heads.
I am shocked. Shocked that you just automatically didn't give it 5 severed heads because it's Murder, She Wrote.
But well,
just a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
Well, maybe 4 or 4 and a half.
4 and a half severed heads.
4 severed heads and 1 arm. No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I would say about 4.
4. Got it. Okay, well, you know what?
Since it's hard to beat Murder, She Wrote. Let me just say that right now. It's hard to top that. So,
yeah.
No pressure.
I think it can match you at least. Maybe not top you, but match you. Since you started with a TV show, I'm going to go in that same direction. So my first choice is going to be an episode of Kolchak.
Oh.
Yeah. Called Chopper.
Ooh.
Yeah, and so what this story is,
it's a helicopter that chops off heads.
Yeah, no.
Nailed it.
No, that would be the Twilight Zone movie. What?
That was wrong.
Yeah, I guess it kind of was, really. Anyway, so Chopper is the story. It is the Headless Horseman story, but it's so far removed from the actual legend. There's no Ichabod praying type character. There's no Brom Bones. There's no Katrina. It is literally just they took the inspiration of the Headless Horseman and they made it a headless motorcycle gang member. And the story opens where this old lady is running like a boarding house or something. And she starts to hear this motorcycle revving in her garage. And she goes down to investigate it. And out of the garage door doesn't break open like you would expect it to. And this motorcycle come out. But it's like a specter, like a ghostly image of the headless rider on the motorcycle comes through the garage door and then becomes like a full figure and then rides away.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up at a mechanic's garage. He lobs off the head of this mechanic who seemingly is like this innocent bystander while his coworker watches in horror. And let me say this. I know it's a TV show from, what is this, the 70s? Kolchak was in the 70s, correct? It wasn't in the 80s?
It wasn't in the 80s, but it might have been in the 60s.
No, I don't think it's that old. Let's just say the 70s. So
you're talking about the original Kolchak.
Yeah, with Darren McGavin, not that rebooted series that came in like the 2000s, which is good too, but not it didn't have the charm of the Darren McGavin ones. So I know they were on a limited budget for a TV show, but they really could have done better on the Headless Rider.
Oh yeah,
it is. Let me describe this to you. So you have this person riding a motorcycle, and the concept sounds cool, but the execution was poorly done, and his torso is tall. Like, it's where his head, where the guy's head would be, is where you could tell the stunt man's is looking out from the split on the collar of the leather jacket.
Yeah, all they did was put on like a big leather jacket,
a big torso,
on this guy.
A big stiff torso. So
because they couldn't digitally remove his head.
No, so they have like this ginormously long torso with these stiff shoulders and stiff arms. Like, the arms are just stationary. It's ridiculous looking because it's so obvious that this is just like, it could literally be like a big refrigerator box just sitting on top of this guy. But they did they managed what they could, and it's kind of a distraction, but it's a cool story because, bottom line, it's a Kolchak episode, and it does not get cooler than Kolchak. Carl Kolchak is awesome.
Oh yeah,
I mean, he's in my mind, as far as like, you know, just legendary TV characters, you have Carl Kolchak, you have Columbo, you know, you have the A-Team,
Jessica Fletcher.
Yes. Sure, Jessica Fletcher.
Yeah.
You know, these are the types of TV characters that are just they made my childhood. They're so awesome.
Oh yeah.
You really have no complaints about this because it is a Carl Kolchak adventure. So this headless rider goes about and is seemingly killing these innocent people with no connection one to another. And Kolchak starts to investigate, obviously, as he does. And he somehow makes this connection that they did all know each other, that they, way back in the day, in their younger days, they were all part of the same motorcycle gang called the Jokers. So, of course, when that part came up, I immediately, like, switched into Batman fan mode. I was like, oh, what, the Jokers?
Oh, gosh.
You know, I'm thinking, like, you know, Cesar Romero is going to come out, do a cameo as the Joker, the head of the motorcycle gang. You know,
I love Cesar Romero.
Oh, yeah, because he's awesome, again. Mm-hmm. Like, he was so awesome, and his mustache was so awesome that... He didn't even have to shave it to be the Joker. They just painted right over that mustache.
Oh, and again, he was on a Murder, She Wrote.
Oh my gosh. It's like, well, it's like Jessica Fletcher is like the Kevin Bacon of TV shows or something. 6 degrees of Jessica Fletcher.
Yeah, oh. Hey, let's do an episode on that.
Okay, I'll let you do that in your Murder, She Wrote podcast.
Is that real, or does everyone want that to be a figment?
No, let's leave that as a figment. That could stay as a figment. So no Cesar Romero. The Jokers have nothing to do with the Batman Joker. So anyway, he starts to make this connection that these Jokers, back in the day, something happened to one of their members, one of the gang members in their gang, and he was tragically, well, I don't even know if it was ever reported that he was tragically killed or he just went missing. Oh. So, spoilers.
Yeah, watch out.
So he starts to put two and two together and realizes that something went amiss within this gang, this motorcycle gang, and this guy ended up dead, and he is the one who's now returned from the grave as... Yeah, was that like the Mr. Miyagi kind
Sorry.
Of spectral Mr.
Yeah,
Miyagi?
I felt like bowing right after I did it.
Daniel-san. So anyway, he makes this connection that something went amiss and this one guy ended up dead and he's now returned as the headless rider.
Right.
And he starts to investigate further and he goes, and this is really clever because I was like, well, how are they going to kind of explain it away that he came from the grave? I mean, it's all hard to believe, but still, you have to explain it somehow in a reasonable way. So he goes to a museum to speak to the curator who's like an expert in all these different weird things, and he starts asking
the headless rider or Carl Kolchak.
I don't think the headless rider could talk, so yeah, no, Carl Kolchak.
Okay, I was just
with
making
head,
sure.
With head.
Yeah.
And so he goes and he starts asking him about, you know, somehow they get on the topic of the French Revolution, and the guy says, well, during the French Revolution, they started burying their enemies. They would sever the heads and they would bury the bodies in one location and bury the heads in a completely separate location.
What I always said that you have to do with Michael Myers if you were to kill him.
And then what you're about to hear next is like, then you would say, no, that's a big no-no, especially in the case of Michael Myers. And this, and then legend says that they're burying their dead their enemies that way.
Uh-huh.
And then the people in Paris started having like a barrage sightings of these ghosts, you know, in Paris, just tormenting them, walking the streets. And
oh my,
what they realized was these were all the spirits of their enemies. Because they were burying them with a severed head in one location, body in another, their spirits were displaced, causing them to wander the streets of Paris and torment people.
Oh
so
my.
Then what they had to do is they had to go back and locate the bodies, locate the heads, and bury them together. Once they did that, the spirits went away.
That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work and disgusting, whoever has to do all that.
Yeah, I think I would just move.
That would be easier. Just let the ghosts have Paris. And so Kolchak realizes this, and he finds out that from the gang members, pressing them a little further, I think he really kind of got the information from one of the female gang members, because she was easier to like give up the information. What had happened is they were trying to play like a prank on this guy, and they were meaning to knock him off his motorcycle. Instead, they had the thing that was going to knock him off too high, and it decapitated him. So they panicked and buried his body. And they buried the head in a separate location for whatever reason. And they, as young gang members, they were started being plagued by the headless rider, their friend. And so back in the day, they realized, oh, we need to get his head and bury it together. So back, they found the head, they put it in the canister, and then they put the canister in the grave, and that stopped the hauntings. Flash forward to them being adults in the modern time, they start being plagued again by the Headless Rider, and he starts killing them one by one. Kolchak realizes what had happened is where the body was hidden, they had dug up the area for construction. They discovered the body, they discovered the head. For whatever reason, the police buried the body, and they had the head, the skull, still in the canister in the the district warehouse. And so, the body and head were separated. That's why the rider came back. So Kolchak had to sneak into the warehouse. And this was probably single-handedly one of the most awesome scenes in all of Kolchak history. He's in the warehouse, and immediately the Headless Rider shows up, and he's, you know, it's like a warehouse, proper warehouse, crates and containers and all, like you'd see like in Indiana Jones or something. So he's there, and the motorcycle rider comes zipping up, and, you know, he's got the sword, and he's swinging at Kolchak, and Kolchak's diving out of the way. A side note, it was really cool because at one point it was very obvious it was Darren McGavin doing this particular stunt where he's standing in the path of the motorcycle rider and he darts to the side at the last second. I thought that was really him. I mean, that could have gone bad if he had not moved in time. Anyway, that's just a quick side note. So yeah. The awesome part was, you know, he's dodging him. Finally, it's the climax. Like, Kolchak is there. He has nowhere to run. The rider's coming right dead smack at him. Kolchak gets the skull out of the canister, draws back, and in true elementary school dodgeball fashion, chucks the skull at the Headless Rider, pegs him perfectly in the chest, knocks him off the motorcycle. He falls off the motorcycle, and of course the spirit is gone. It's just at this point just bones. And Kolchak, what was funny is Kolchak walks up to it, and for whatever reason, once the skull hit the body, the skull reattached to the skeleton, and the leather clothes were laying on the ground, and the skeleton was just like bare. Like, so not only did he hit him hard enough to reattach the skull, but he knocked him clean out of his clothes. It was awesome.
That does sound awesome.
Yeah.
Thinking of that episode, on a scale of 5 severed heads, what would you give it?
I would give it 5 out of 5 severed heads.
Because,
yeah, because again, Kolchak. Kolchak. That's why.
Cool Kolchak.
Yeah.
Kolchak is cool.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so.
That was an interesting story.
It's a cool episode.
So my next one, I'm going to talk about the movie Sleepy Hollow, starring Johnny Depp as Constable Crane.
Yes.
Constable Ichabod Crane. And I think
old Tim Burton's masterpiece.
Yeah, Tim Burton. Love the music. Love the scenery.
I will give you that. The music, Danny Elfman music is pretty cool. I love his music.
And I do.
Although, can I say this real quick? I think they got to a point where they had, after Batman hit it big, they had Danny Elfman doing like every superhero movie, Darkman, Spider-Man. It almost got to the point where you had Danny Elfman overload, and I think and he was doing the plan. He did everything. Tim Burton actually planned the Apes remake. That was probably a Danny Elfman low in my book.
But Danny Elfman, his music is perfect for a movie like Sleepy Hollow.
It is actually
use his music for
everything.
A movie. Yeah, for everything.
Yeah, it was really good. I'll give it that.
So great music, great scenery that I believe they built themselves. It looks, or a set that they built themselves. I mean, it looks like it really exists somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
But I find it interesting, in this movie, Ichabod Crane was not a school teacher. And I forgot to say, in the Murder, She Wrote one, that Dorian was a teacher there at the boys' school.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to Johnny Depp, he is a constable. And
Constable Crane.
Yes. And that was not a very good impression. But, you know, you tried
your
best.
I wasn't supposed to be Johnny Depp. I was supposed to be a Sleepy Hollowite.
I thought you were trying to be Christopher Lee.
Oh, no. Oh, I can't. Nobody can do Christopher Lee.
You shouldn't even try.
Christopher Lee's in a class all his own.
Well, and he's starring in the movie.
Yeah.
And he is, I guess, a judge or...
Yeah, that's right.
Some incidents have been happening in Sleepy Hollow, and they want Ichabod to go and try to figure out what's going on. And Christopher Lee only has a very small part in the movie, and talking, of course, because you can't have Christopher Lee in a movie without talking. Like I said, he's the judge telling Ichabod that he's going to go. And, I mean, his voice is just so, so booming and demanding. Of course, in true Christopher Lee fashion, you just want to replay the parts over over and over.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the movie...
Well, just real quick, since you're talking about Christopher Lee, they have some really cool people playing in this movie. I guess the council, the old man you have, and you have some Tim Burton alumni in there, like Michael Gouge, who played Alfred in the Batman movies, was in it.
You have Ian McDermott.
Yeah, who played Palpatine, the Emperor, in the Star Wars movies. You had the guy, Rooney, Ed Rooney from the Ferris Bueller movie.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, you had like all these guys as like the council. I thought that was cool. Let me just say, I'm not big on the Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow, but I did find it cool that he included all these notable actors like that.
See, I really like the movie, and I always have. I love all of the humor in it. And yeah, there's a lot of humor in the movie, but I guess you just have to kind of be paying attention, because you would think in the movie Sleepy Hollow, there's not going to be. It's just very dark and sinister, but it's really not. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The movie was made in 1999, and Johnny Depp, I love Johnny Depp. I mean, I pretty much love him in everything. There's some things I haven't seen him as, but I've always loved Johnny Depp. Christina, and he obviously plays Ichabod. Christina Ricci, she plays Katrina, and she's got blonde hair in the movie, and I thought she did really, really good. I thought she looked good and everything, sounded good. Casper Van Dien plays Brom.
That was an odd choice, I have to admit. I dug Casper Van Dien in Starship Troopers.
Yeah, I think he's really good. And you know what's funny is that you think he's just this big guy, and he plays these tough characters. But remember when we saw him? I guess it was Texas Frightmare? Well, anyway.
We saw him?
Yes, or at least I did. It was when we were in that room. Remember when we went in to get Daniel Cudmore's autograph and Charisma Carpenter was in there?
Oh, no, yeah.
He came walking in, and apparently he's the nicest guy.
I completely forgot about that, yeah.
I mean, just a great, great guy. Came walking in, and the dude is tiny.
Yeah.
He is almost like Corey Feldman tiny, but not that tiny. And I thought, oh, my gosh, he looks so much bigger on screen. Now, I'm sure he's still in good shape and everything. That's not what I'm saying, but he just looks a lot bigger than he really is.
So, I completely forgot we actually saw him in person like that.
What I find interesting about this movie, and if you haven't seen it, the Headless Horseman, and let's not forget, the Headless Horseman, there's two horsemen. One rides a horse and the other walks around.
Uh-huh.
Ray Park, I believe, is the one that just is off of the horse. I think they have a completely different one that actually rides. I don't know if they go back and forth, but Ray Park from, of course, Star Wars and X-Men, but great job. And
X versus Sever. Sorry.
And we met him, too.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah. So nice. So just...
I'm going to tell y'all a secret. Colleen touched his butt.
It was on accident.
Not on accident.
It was on accident. We were taking a picture, and I was trying to put my arm around him.
Yeah,
on
accident. Accidentally.
Accidentally.
Yes.
Quotes. I'm doing my fingers in quotes.
Oh, yes.
Accidentally.
Yes. I'll remember that the next time we run into Charisma Carpenter.
Mm-hmm. We should do our own podcast.
Wait, that's what this is.
On how you act with celebrities.
Oh, no. Continue. Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, I thought you'd want me to continue. I find it interesting.
You're forgetting one other person who plays the Headless Horseman in this movie.
And who's that?
The most important of all.
Oh, yes, of course. Christopher Walken plays the actual...
Again, another Tim Burton alumni.
You don't see his face. Well, in a flashback, you see him before he becomes
the
horseman. Yeah, he's a Hessian. But then you don't see him as the horseman until the very end.
Uh-huh.
And it's cool. He's got his teeth. They're not just regular teeth. In the movie, the Hessian, he filed down his teeth to make them all look like sharp fangs because he just wanted to be that much more intimidating.
Okay, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I remember when this movie came out, they made a big deal because they said Christopher Walken did that to his teeth.
No,
that's people, a rumor?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I thought that too, but no, he didn't.
Because he's crazy enough to do something like that.
And I think that's why somebody made that up, is because he is a bit crazy. You know, I don't think he's like really that crazy though. I mean, I think he's just...
I don't know about that. He's pretty wacky.
Well, anyway, you can contact him and ask him.
I will do that.
But I heard it was just a rumor.
Okay, that's kind of a bummer. I thought, man, that puts him in a whole other echelon of actors if he went that far to get into character.
I know, that would have been kind of cool, but then...
What would have happened if you would have actually bit his tongue, though, if he had done that? Anyway.
Probably would have bled, and he would have had a little drinky poo there.
Christopher Walken doesn't. Blade Lady. Christopher Walken. Yeah, that's a horrible Christopher Walken.
No, I was...
Sorry.
Like, what is that?
I'm going to edit that out.
Please. So the movie just begins with someone getting decapitated, and you start, once Ichabod gets there, you start finding out that all of these murders are kind of related. Like, they all start having things in common, and everyone, he's finding out that people are actually related, kin, you know. And Christina Ricci has to tell him, well, pretty much everybody in town is related somehow. And I'm thinking, that's kind of creepy, but anyway,
that's gross.
Yeah, she tells him that.
Are they all playing banjos too, dueling banjos in that town?
Let's not bring it to that level, come on. One person I forgot to mention, I believe this part happens at the very, very beginning of the movie, and he actually has an uncredited role, is you see Martin Landau in the movie. And
nice.
I love Martin Landau.
Yeah.
I love watching him in Mission Impossible, the original TV series.
Uh-huh.
He's one of my favorite characters.
Again, Mission Impossible is just, that's again up there with Kolchak and Columbo as just being just awesome TV.
Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, gosh.
And I really don't think he has a speaking part. I think his little scene, he really doesn't need to speak.
Yeah.
He's in this carriage. He's by himself. There's a driver, but the driver sits up on top of the carriage. Like,
I do remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was neat, but I thought, oh, it's kind of cool that he had an uncredited role, but then you still want to see his name in the credits too,
because
he's such an important figure. So in the movie, you notice that all these things are happening, and it's all beginning to be related to everything else. Everything's connected somehow, and so Ichabod finally figures out that Katrina's stepmom is
Miranda Richardson.
Yes.
Yeah.
She is the one behind the Headless Horseman killings.
Yeah.
She controls the horsemen. And I thought that was an interesting twist. It kind of reminds me of what you just talked about with Kolchak.
Uh-huh.
She actually has his skull. And so whoever has his skull can control him.
Oh, wow.
And have him go out and kill whoever they want.
So Tim Burton stole that from Kolchak.
Yeah, exactly. Well, another thing I found was interesting. You see in the movie, the Headless Horseman just walk right by certain people because he's not after them. And so in a way, you know, this frightening, scary beyond reason situation, and then he just walks right by people. And so you're thinking, well, he's going to lop off anyone's head that he comes across.
Yeah.
But then that's not the case. So it actually has a rhyme and reason behind it.
Okay, maybe the movie kind of did grow on me with multiple viewings. I remember just really despising it when I first saw it. But that part I always thought was really cool when that came up. Because again, you thought he was going to be like the Terminator or the Predator, where he's just killing everybody.
Yeah.
But it kind of reminded me of Dark Knight of the Scarecrow. Where he was very,
even though
in Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, Bubba is actually a good guy enacting vengeance, whereas the Headless Horseman is still a villain.
Right.
But the Scarecrow was targeting specific people, and everyone, even though they didn't realize that everyone else was safe because they weren't guilty.
Right.
So that I did find that part of Sleepy Hollow to be interesting, that they did that.
So it would kind of give some people a little bit reprieve. Okay, well, he may not be after me. And it wasn't until towards the end they figured out who he's after and why and all that kind of stuff.
Can I ask you this? Because with Johnny Depp, especially nowadays, people either just love him or they're like, he's just overrated. You're saying you pretty much love him in everything.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think we get like a little bit of a Johnny Depp overload, especially when it comes to like Tim Burton movies? Like Sweeney Todd and...
Well, some things I haven't seen him in. I haven't seen him in that. And I saw Edward Scissorhands once. I thought he did good as the character, but I don't care for the movie. And maybe I need to see it again.
I thought he was excellent as Edward Scissorhands. And I also think that's an excellent movie.
I just need to see it again.
Yeah, I haven't seen Sweeney Todd, although I hear a lot of people ranting and raving about it. I haven't also seen Willy Wonka. And I love the original Willy Wonka, and I think that's part of the reason why I didn't want to see the new one, because I thought it'd just be horrible.
Yeah, I didn't see that. And see,
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
See, I didn't care for him much in Alice in Wonderland as the Mad Hatter, and I know people are like, what?
I don't think I saw that, did I?
You haven't seen it. And when I saw him in Alice in Wonderland, I thought... I kind of need to dial it down a little bit with Johnny Depp, but he's great as Jack Sparrow.
Oh, yeah.
In the first one.
Yeah.
Now, all the sequels, again, it got to be too much Johnny Depp being Jack Sparrow.
But I don't think that's his fault. He's just playing the character.
He is genius for doing the Jack Sparrow character that way. It's just the typical Hollywood wanting to milk the cash cow got to be too much with that.
So,
sorry, I know it took us off topic, but it is Johnny Depp.
Yeah, that's okay. I like him as the parts that he plays. And yeah, I mean, producers might ask him to be too much, you know, like you're saying, he might be around too much, but I guess I don't see it that way because I don't see every single thing he comes out with. I did like in this movie, he does a lot of expressions, and like I said, there's a lot of humor in the movie, but you've got to be paying attention. You have to see it for what it is.
There really is. I do remember that part where he had just gotten into Sleepy Hollow. They were taking him out to his first investigation of the body of the guardsmen from the tower, and I do remember, then the blood squirt up and get him in the goggles or something.
That was when he did the autopsy.
The autopsy. I guess when he was looking at the body, like the bug crawled out of the neck and like freaked him out. There are moments where he did kind of chuckle.
There are just little things that he really did the part well.
Uh-huh. I will give it this. You could not have asked for a better person to play the Headless Horseman than Ray Park.
Oh, yeah.
The way
the man walks alone, that's it. I mean, just walking.
I think a lot of people complained. I do remember this, that because he was Darth Maul, and people were expecting him to make him too like martial artsy, and it doesn't come across that way at all. It's all swordplay.
Yeah,
there's no martial arts about it. And I think people are just, of course, wanting to complain before they even see anything.
No, but, oh my gosh, people do that.
And it's funny. I've grown up as a big G.I. Joe fan, and after.
You always find a way to work in your little likes into our podcasts.
Well, that's what makes us fun. And I remember after seeing him in Phantom Menace as Darth Maul, one of the first things coming out of Phantom Menace that I said to my brother Vic and my brother Mike was, you know, if they make a G.I. Joe movie, they need to get that guy to play Snake Eyes. And lo and behold, flash forward amount of years.
Really?
Yeah, X amount of years, and they announced a G.I. Joe movie, and Ray Park is Snake Eyes. Like, called it.
Someone heard you.
Yeah.
Or either that or you're making it up.
So, out of 5 severed heads, what would you give this movie?
I would give it a 4 out of 5.
You like that 4. You like that number 4.
Well, 4's an even. I'm an even person.
Yeah, gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again, I think upon multiple viewings, it probably would grow on me a little bit more. I just maybe give it another try. I couldn't really get behind Christina Ricci too much.
I liked it the more I saw it.
She was good in that movie with Liam Neeson. Afterlife? That was her in it, right?
That was her. You're just saying that because she was naked.
Was she naked in that?
Yeah, she was real naked in the movie.
I have to go back and watch that again just to make sure. Frame by frame.
Really? Wow.
So anyway, My next choice is going to be a movie called The Hollow. And a lot of people may not...
One of my favorites.
Yeah. There's a couple of movies out there called The Hollow, and let me explain which one this is. This is the one, obviously, it's based on The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. It came out in 2004. It has Kaley Cuoco as the Katrina character. Kevin, is it Zegers? It's not Zegers, it's Zegers.
It's Zegers. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Kevin Zegers as the Ichabod Crane character, and his name in the movie is Ian Cranston, so he does kind of resemble, his name does kind of resemble Ichabod Crane.
They all do. They're all their names resemble.
I guess so, Karen, Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And the role...
Leave him alone. Sorry. Leave him alone.
Are y'all ready for this? The role of Brom Bones is played by the character... Well, is the character Brody, played by none other than that thespian of thespians, Nick Carter.
I thought he did good, though.
He did. I was, when I saw it, because you're the one that bought the DVD, and when you brought it home, and I was like, oh, who's in this? Oh, Kaley Cuoco, okay. And I'm like, Nick Carter? What the? And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be so cheesy. But, yeah, he's no Hollywood powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination, but he was actually pretty good as the bully.
He was, and I really like how Nick Carter got his life together later on. Yeah. He started eating healthy, lost a bunch of weight, got in shape, and just kind of, I don't even know if he drinks anymore, just kind of straightened himself out.
Well, I guess that's good. I guess that's a good thing. But The Hollow, yeah, it's really good. Again, I thought, oh my gosh, it's going to be cheesy. Oh, and it's got a lot of people in it. Judge Reinhold plays Ian's father.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty good, Nick, because again, you're thinking Judge Reinhold, really?
Yeah, but he does the same eye expressions. Yeah.
Nick Turturro is in it as the sheriff. He does really good. Eileen Brennan is like the town benefactor.
Yeah.
Like the big important lady.
Yeah.
Who everyone's always trying to stay on her good side. She's not in it too much.
No, she only has like one appearance.
One big scene toward the end.
But and I think she passed away like not too long after this movie came out. So that might have been one of her last...
I thought you were going to say that's what did her in, was doing this movie.
Oh my gosh, you're on a roll tonight.
It's like with, if y'all know, Orson Welles has like this fabulous career. And the last movie he ever did, he was the voice of Unicron in the Star Wars? Oh my gosh. He was the voice of Unicron in the Transformers animated movie. And then like after he did that, he keeled over and people was like, you know, was doing a crappy movie like the Transformers.
Oh gosh.
And then the same thing happened with Burgess Meredith was the voice of Galobulus in the G.I. Joe animated movie. He did that, and then right after he did that, he died. So it was like, Eileen Brennan does The Hollow? I don't know. Is it real or is it a figment? You have to ask yourself.
Way to bring the episode down.
I know, right? By far, the most important actor connected to this movie, The Hollow, without a doubt, is the one, the only, Stacy Keach.
Whose voice I love.
Oh, another one. Yeah, he's got a great voice. As Klaus von Rippa, who's the... What does he do, Colleen?
He takes care of the cemetery.
Yeah, he maintains the cemetery.
Groundskeeper.
And that's a character in the real story, right?
Yes.
Okay. I know on the surface of it, it seems like it would be a goofy, horrible, cheesy movie. And granted, it is, but for what it is, it's actually really, really entertaining.
Yeah, I think everyone who had the parts did good with their part. They played their part well.
They did. And it's they make it interesting. It's funny. The characters are likable.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
For them to actually make you like Nick Carter, it was a feat in itself. But this is what was interesting about his character, Brody. You know, of course, he's the bully. And in any of these Sleepy Hollow adaptations, you're never cheering for the Brom character.
No.
You know, in that Murder, She Wrote with Barry White or Williams or whatever, whoever they chose for that.
Really?
And everything, and all these. But in this one, yeah, he starts out, he's a jerk. He's a punk, you know, and you're thinking, oh, well, no, of course they pick Nick Carter. Why would they?
He's always around. He's like, won't go away.
Yeah, just picking at Ian and picking at Adam and making fun of Klaus Van Ripper and all that. So, but then as the movie progresses, you actually start to like the guy.
Yeah.
He's likable, and spoiler alert, he doesn't get killed. He's one of the ones that makes it to the end, and you're actually glad, because by the end, him and Klaus, Stacy Keach's character, they're kind of like buddy-buddy.
Working together. End. Well, he realized you can either, and he told him, you can either be a hero, or you can run away being a chicken, known for that. What are you going to be known for? And he was like, yeah, okay, let's do it.
See, and the thing with Nick Carter's character, with this Brom character, he had a fast, out of all the characters, he was fascinated with the Sleepy Hollow legend. And that,
right.
We should actually take a step back, and that's what's different about this from all the others. The other examples we're giving tonight, they don't acknowledge the legend of Sleepy Hollow. It's just like a story that is inspired by it. In this movie, they fully acknowledge the legend of Sleepy Hollow because Brody's character is like obsessed with it.
Yeah.
To the point in the movie, they do like a haunted hayride as part of like their school fundraiser, and Brody plays the Headless Horseman in the school haunted hayride because he's obsessed. You know, the movie opens where he's telling these two friends of his about Sleepy Hollow, and this town doesn't respect the legend that it's built on. You know, we got to make them respect the legend again. And you're like, whatever, dude. But again, it works in his favor because I think that's what helps him survive the horseman in this movie, because he's so obsessed with the legend that he knew exactly what to do to survive the night.
Yeah, exactly.
Ian Cranston, turns out that he is a direct descendant of Ichabod Crane. How do they do it that Crane became...
He changed his name.
Throughout, not him, but other people in his family lineage.
Mm-hmm.
It went from Crane to Cranston to Cranston.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that to kind of throw the Headless Horseman off the family's trail, because they knew one day the horseman would be back, and when the horseman came back, he would come after the Cranes.
Right.
So that was their way of hiding the Crane family name. Kaylee Cuoco, again, either lover or hater, she's, my opinion, maybe people won't agree with me, is adorable in this movie.
Oh, yeah,
she's likable. She's, you know what else she was really good in? Is that movie Killer Movie.
Yes.
If you haven't seen, again, it's a very cheesy movie, but it's meant to be. It's meant to kind of poke fun at the whole Scream phenomenon.
Love that movie.
Yeah, without being a satire. It's Killer Movie is good. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. But yeah, all in all, it's just a very entertaining movie. You really like Ian and Karen, and you like they have a good chemistry.
They do,
The two. Mm-hmm. They have really good chemistry. You end up liking Brody. You really love Stacy Keach. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the movie is full of likable characters that you can get behind, that you actually care about. It moves along at a really good pace, and it has so many nods to the actual legend of Sleepy Hollow. It's, for someone who likes the legend of Sleepy Hollow, it's actually a really, really good take on the story. So,
one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, definitely.
So, on a scale of 1 to 5 severed heads, how many would you give it?
Okay, that's a tough one. I'm kind of like going back and forth. I'm going to go ahead and give it 4 severed heads. It's not a perfect movie, but it's really good, and it's inventive.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
It is fun. It's inventive with how they tackled it. They didn't make it a typical, oh, it's Sleepy Hollow, but it's placed in modern day. It's like, it's Sleepy Hollow in modern day, but it fully acknowledges that there's a long history to the name Sleepy Hollow. So it's good. I definitely would recommend it. All right, Colleen, your next choice.
Well, my next and last choice.
And final, yes.
I saved the best for last. I'm going to be talking about The Legend of Sleepy Hollow TV movie starring Jeff Goldblum.
Good night.
And I know everyone loves this movie just as much as I do.
There are people out there scratching their heads like, wait, Jeff Goldblum was in a Sleepy Hollow movie?
The guy in that Alien movie was in that movie?
He's not known for Independence Day, if that's what you're...
Okay. This movie came out
in maybe Jurassic Park or The Fly or...
Oh, I forgot about Jurassic Park.
Yeah, not so much Independence Day.
This movie came out in 1980, takes place in the normal era, you know, 1800s, I guess.
It's a period piece.
Okay, yeah, period piece.
I guess that's what it would be considered.
I don't know. How many times do you think I've watched this movie so far this holiday season alone?
I don't know about this holiday season alone, but easily in your lifetime. And this is this is not an exaggeration. Colleen has probably seen The Legend of Sleepy Hollow as many times as I have seen Star Wars or Raiders of the Lost Ark, to my two favorite movies. And she see, yeah, if I had to take a wild guess this month, October 2016, you have probably seen it, well, I'm going to go ahead and say 31 times, because I know you've seen it at least once a day.
Oh, 31 for October 31st?
Yeah.
And probably I thought you were going to say like 500.
Easy, it could be. No, you know what? I take that back, because you'll put it on to fall asleep to, and it'll play all the way through. And then if you're still like wanting the TV on, you'll just hit, you'll play, and you'll play it again.
Mm-hmm.
So at the minimum, you've seen it 31 times this month.
Oh, yeah.
The minimum is 31.
And that,
could
I mean,
easily be 50 or 60.
It's not watching it all the way through, but then it doesn't matter.
No.
So I absolutely love this movie. I remember, that's I guess whenever it came out, mm-hmm. I was, what, 7? And so I kind of grew up watching this movie. And yeah. I love how the church we go to now reminds me of the church in the movie.
Yeah,
when
it
joined
really does.
The church a few years ago, I thought, oh my gosh, this is just like the church in the movie Legend of Sleepy Hollow. It was so awesome.
Please tell me we didn't join that church because it reminded you of Sleepy Hollow.
Well, I mean...
Good night.
You know. So, I love the setting. I love... I just love everything about it.
It's got a lot of good points. Again, this is one where I thought, wait, what? And you're like, don't make fun. You know, we were dating at the time. Don't make fun. This is one of my childhood favorites. So I was like, okay. It's just, it caught me off guard. I've never heard of this before. You know, I've got a lot of childhood favorites that aren't necessarily everybody's. So I'm okay with that.
So it stars Jeff Goldblum as Ichabod Crane, and everybody has the normal names because it's not an adaptation, I guess, of it. It's the actual legend.
No, it is an adaptation of it.
Well, yes,
that's
but...
That's what it is.
Okay, what am I trying to say? They have the same names as the book, right?
That would be an adaptation, yes.
Well, I guess what I was trying to say was, it's not one like Murder, She Wrote, where it's the characters, but they have different names.
Yeah.
Like that. And then Meg Foster plays Katrina, and I thought she did a really, really good job in her part.
She did, but to be honest, Meg Foster, her Katrina, is kind of a B-I-T-C-H in this.
She is, until she's talking with Thelma Dumke.
Yeah.
Talking to her, and she kind of snaps her out of it, and then they start talking about the men that they are in love with, and then they bond over that. And then, of course, the guy who plays Brom Bones is Dick Butkus, and that man, you know, professional football player, probably Hall of Famer, I'm not sure, but he can act.
He's good.
When I saw him in the movie, I knew, when I was little, I knew he was a football player because, you know, my dad, my brothers were always watching all the games. I knew exactly who he was, and I thought, man, he's really good as an actor. It's so cool.
I said earlier during The Hollow that you never are rooting for the Brom character, except in The Hollow, and I take that back. You root for Dick Butkus's Brom Bones in this.
Yeah, he's a pain.
He is.
But he's...
Again, you learn to like him. He becomes likable.
Yeah, he just kind of gets put in his place, and then...
And he's good. I did like him.
And then the groundskeeper who plays in The Hollow, that character, Van Ripper, that... I think his name in the book is Van Ripper, isn't it? Or no, it's Van...
I think it's Van Ripper.
Something like that. But in this movie, it's Fritz Vanderhoof. Vanderhoof. Some of them say Hoof, and some of them say Hoff. I'm not sure. But it's John Sylvester White. And I believe he is the same man that was in Welcome Back, Kotter.
It is.
As
There's
like
no
the
doubt
principal.
About it. There's no doubt about it. It was him.
Yeah. And he always has that same scowl on his face. That same, he always walks around. around with that frown.
You remember him from Welcome Back, Cotter listeners? How he would, he'd come in already one to give crap to the sweat hogs. And,
yes.
You know, he had that. I mean, the man was probably born with that grimace on his
face.
Oh,
my gosh, yeah. And he would, just taking a break real quick, on Welcome Back, Cotter, he would walk on set and everyone would go crazy because you loved him, but he got on your nerves because of how he acted.
Oh, yeah.
But he always secretly rooted for Cotter and the sweat hogs, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, getting back to the movie. So, Jeff Goldblum, Ichabod Crane, he travels to Sleepy Hollow, starting a teaching position.
Yeah.
And it's the typical little one-room schoolhouse. He's got his little bedroom in the back of the school. And I think, man, that is so... It's like cozy, but then also like really scary because he's there by himself all the time.
Yeah, it seems like it's like literally out in the middle of nowhere. You see no other of the town around
I think it's closer to the towns than you think it is, because you know he walks of course everywhere pretty much, but I think it's just kind of set apart by itself, because I always think about that too, you know, how far out there is he away from everyone.
Yeah.
But I always think it always looks so cold, because where they are it's cold. There's snow on the ground,
yeah.
And you can tell that it's real snow.
Yeah.
Now, when there's a part where they had snow fall on Katrina, you could tell that was fake snow. But you can tell they're breathing smoke and their noses are red. And at the one part towards the end of the movie, Jeff Goldblum, you could tell when he's talking, I think his mouth might be frozen.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, because like you, so, because since you've seen it 5 million times, I've seen it about 400 million times, because I'm usually
exactly.
with you when
you're right, exactly.
It.
So you know it's cold, and I think, oh my gosh, he's in that, and they've got a stove, like wood burning stove in the schoothouse, of course, to keep the children
hot
warm.
Hot bellied stove.
But you think, oh my gosh, it has got to be absolutely freezing in that little school.
Oh, you know it's drafty as all get out.
Yeah. So anyway. Basically, it just is the book, you know, he is in love with Katrina,
mm-hmm.
and I think whenever he first sees her, he mm-hmm. instantly falls in love with her, and I think she does him too. I think she falls in love with him as well.
Not at first, because she was griping at him. She slapped him because he caused the snow to fall off the roof of the schoolhouse onto her, and she gives him a good smacking. I don't know, because before that happened, she was kind of like taken aback when she saw him up on climbing on the roof of the schoolhouse.
Uh-huh.
She was like asking the guy, "Oh, is that him?" And she's kind of looking at him like, "Oh, he's hot stuff,"
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, but she, her and Brom are kind of supposed to be seeing each other, but it's been like 3 years and he's not proposing or anything, and her dad's getting irritated at Brom, and Brom doesn't want to. Yeah, Brom doesn't want to rush into anything. And then the other character, Thelma Dumke, she's in love with Brom.
She's not in the book, right?
I'm not sure. I haven't actually read the entire story. And I believe the book ends differently than this movie does.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
it does.
I think the book is more along the lines with the cartoon towards the end, at least. But she's in love with Brom, and apparently she only married her husband, who has now passed away, to make Brom jealous. So you're thinking, oh my gosh, what? This lady has lived her entire adult life being in love with Brom and
has never said anything.
Yeah, and she even had a child with her husband. And anyway,
the husband who she married to make Brom jealous.
Yes. So there's a legend, and so like you said with the Hollow, that they talk about the legend. Everyone talks in the movie is talking about spooks and ghosts, and
yeah, the whole town's obsessed with like the paranormal.
Yeah, and Ichabod Crane is the only one that doesn't want to, well, maybe not the only one, but he's like the main voice of reason. He doesn't want to believe any of those ghost stories, and they make devil bags where they mix this stuff, you know, they get it from a witch doctor or
Indian medicine woman.
Yeah, medicine man, and mix it up, and they hang these devil bags around the school.
It's
and
basically like hanging up garlic for a vampire.
Yeah, and he's complaining about the smell, and then he throws one into his stove in the schoolhouse, and then it like explodes in his face, and so then they say he's cursed and all this kind of stuff. And whenever he's walking out by himself, they give him extra devil bags to protect him. And so it's like the town is just living on these superstitions, and he's so tired of it. But then he's walking by himself, and he hears this, you know, like sinister laugh. And so he's kind of getting scared, and he's taking off running. And then he sees, well, Fritz tells him the story of the old schoolmaster who he was running away on his horse from the headless horseman and fell into
the previous schoolmaster to Ichabod.
Yeah, and fell into the river and died. His name was Winthrop Palmer.
But he says that he got chased into the up the cliff into the ravine by the headless horseman. He was trying.
That's what I just said.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, he was running away from the headless horseman on his horse. And so then Ichabod starts hearing this laugh, and then he sees him standing in the window, and then he describes the face to someone. They're like, Palmer, you know, that's Winthrop Palmer, thinking he was dead. And so later on in the movie, Winthrop Palmer shows up in his schoolhouse talking to him, and all these little kind of paranormal things are happening while they're talking. So I wonder, how is he making those things happen? But anyway, you know, that's beside the point.
It is funny because, like you're saying, the whole town is obsessed. The kids are talking about it in Ichabod's classroom. They're all obsessed with ghosts and this and that, and the owl that lives in the rafters of the schoolhouse is really the spirit of Chief Running Buffalo.
I was going to get to that. Thank you for beating me to it.
But, you know, they're just obsessed, but yet Ichabod, like you were saying earlier, is the voice of reason and saying there's no such thing as ghosts and that. But yet he's the one that everything is happening to. Like, I'm sure all these other townsfolk who are obsessed with it would love it to happen to them because they're obsessed with it. But yet it's happening to Ichabod, the one skeptic that lives in Sleepy Hollow.
So he's hearing noises and chains rattling and seeing shadows, and you know, then he realizes that nothing's there. And then he had seen a shadow at the cemetery and heard some noises, and so then he went to investigate, and he realized that it was Fritz Vanderhoof, the groundskeeper, that was walking around the cemetery pretending he was the ghost of Chief Running Buffalo. And it had also been him, I guess it was a few days before that, he was walking around the schoolhouse making noises, and Ichabod heard him, and he, you know, he opened the door, and he was there, but he said he didn't see anybody, didn't hear anything, and all that kind of stuff.
So he's just trying to do these little things, kind of like a Scooby-Doo cartoon where he's trying to convince Ichabod.
Yeah.
That the headless horseman is real.
Trying to convince him. And so later on in the movie, they have pretty much, this is the end of the movie. Katrina's family has the winter ball there at her house. Yeah. And, you know, things happen, and Ichabod gets thrown out and everything. And
that's the part that always bugs me, and you kind of glossed over it. Yeah. They're at the winter ball, and Brom, being Brom, is just causing trouble.
He gets jealous, mad.
Kind of picks a fight with Ichabod.
Well, hold on. Ichabod, he sees Winthrop Palmer standing in the window.
Again.
And so, again, he freaks out, and he accidentally, like, knocks over some food on Brom, and Brom just loses all self-control.
At that point, Brom was looking for an excuse to beat him up, so that's all it took. So Brom causes this whole big ruckus. He's chasing Ichabod around. In the meantime, food's flying everywhere, and people are getting, you know, hit in the face with cakes and pies, and tables are getting knocked over, and then Brom gets a hold of Ichabod, throws him out the window.
Yeah.
And after all that, Ichabod is the one that's being asked to leave, but Brom can stay.
Yeah, everybody gets mad at him.
What in the world? What kind of backwards world are they living in that Brom gets to stay at the party, but Ichabod gets sent away? You know, that always kind of bugs me.
At least Katrina, that was when she tells Brom off. You know, she was like, she'd had it with him.
Yeah, that was
and so
straw.
Everybody's leaving, going home, and this is when Jeff Goldblum, you could tell his mouth is frozen when he's talking.
Yeah.
And so he's on his horse, Gunpowder, going home. And so he starts hearing noises through the woods, and he sees the headless horseman. And then Thelma Dumke and her father, who is Fritz Vanderhoof, the groundskeeper, they're on their little sled going home, and they hear things too. And so they're, you know, oh my gosh, it's a headless horseman.
Yeah.
And so then you realize that Ichabod is seeing two headless horsemen, so he realizes that one of them starts talking, and it's Brahm. So Brahm is dressed up, and the real headless horseman, since I guess it's Halloween night, they don't really talk about Halloween in the movie at all. But
oh, that is true.
Yeah, they call it the winter ball, and it's all that snow is everywhere. It's so cold, but up north, supposed to be in New York, you know, you don't know. I guess it might be cold like that in October. But anyway, the headless horseman really, this time, it shows up. And so he starts chasing Brahm, and Ichabod is thinking that the real headless horseman is Winthrop Palmer. And so then the headless horseman is chasing Brahm. Ichabod is chasing the headless horseman, thinking it's Winthrop Palmer, and chasing him all the way back into town. And then you come to find out that Winthrop Palmer had been found by the squire in the barn of his house at the ball, at the party. And so they were taking him, like, I guess, to the nut house because they realized that he's crazy. And
no,
so
they just sent him away. They pretty much banned him from Sleepy Hollow.
Okay. I didn't know where they were to.
Yeah, they just said he was going to ride him out into, like, the next county.
Okay.
That driver.
Yeah, I guess so. And so then when Ichabod realizes, he was like, okay, if that's Winthrop, then who did I see in the woods? And that other one was Brahm. And then Katrina's like, oh my gosh, just let it go, you know? And so then it just ends with them going into the house because her dad is given the blessing for them to be together and all that kind of stuff. So it ends. I always love the way it ends. It's completely different.
Yeah, it is good. It has a happy ending as opposed
happy
to
ending, yes.
A lot of the other versions of it. So, okay, yeah, it is good. It's fun. I just tell this one story concerning this movie.
This better not be what I think it is.
The Halloween party?
Yes. No, you won't. You will not tell that story.
Okay, we will not tell that story.
No, go ahead. Gosh.
So there's, again, Colleen is obsessed with this movie. She, rightfully so. It is very entertaining. It's a cute, good, fun, family-friendly movie. And we were having our yearly Halloween party here at the house, family and friends over. And, you know, things were, you know, everything was good. Everyone was having fun, and things were hopping and what all. And Colleen is like, I'm going to put in The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. So she puts that on the TV. Most of the people are in the den. If not the den, they're in the backyard by the grill, or I mean by the campfire. She puts it on, and no more than it starts, and everybody's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. What's this? Oh, okay." And talking subsides, and people are just sitting there
because they're watching the movie because it's awesome.
And then, you know, I think it's time for us to go, and like people just start. So if you ever want a party to clear out because you're ready to go to bed,
no.
Put on The Legend of Sleepy Hollow with Jeff Goldblum. Out of 5 severed heads, what would you give this?
Give it a 10.
Wait, what?
But 10? If I have to limit it to 5, then I give it a 5.
10 severed heads out of 5.
Yes. I would love to give it the whole bodies.
Yep. Head, body, and all. 5.
Right.
Okay.
That's how much I love
she
that
does.
Movie.
She does. Yeah, I knew you were going to save that one for last. Well, I had to admit, when we came up with the topic of the Sleepy Hollow and talking about the adaptations, I knew that was the first thing that popped into my head because of you. and probably because it was playing on the TV, I'm sure, because you have it going constantly.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that popped into my head immediately was my last choice.
Oh.
Which is The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad by the Disney Studios. It came out in 1949.
I didn't know that either. That's crazy.
I didn't realize it was that old. And I've been watching this thing. This would come on every year in October on the Disney Channel. And before we even had cable, it was coming on whatever channel on regular TV. Every Halloween they would play this. And what we'll be talking about is the Ichabod segment, which comes second. You know, Mr. Toad is the first segment, Ichabod second. But oh my gosh, I grew up watching, you know, The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad, and you know, loved it.
Love the cartoon.
Yeah, it is. So when I think of Sleepy Hollow, I think of Bing Crosby's voice, you know, as Ichabod Crane.
That's so good.
It is. to me a classic.
Can I say that I always watched that cartoon too and loved it, but I wasn't sure about the Adventures of Mr. Toad or whatever it is.
You weren't until, as big on that one?
And I didn't even know. I don't even think I knew about it. When you and I started watching it, because we bought that DVD and it has it on there,
yeah,
it didn't look familiar. So I don't know if
wow.
I don't know if I just skipped over that part until Ichabod came on or what.
You know, I think the Ichabod segment would come on like the Wonderful World of Disney and at Halloween time, and they would only play the Ichabod segment.
Yeah, probably.
Now that you mentioned it, when I came on the Disney Channel, they played it in full. You know, Ichabod and Mr. Toad all together. And that's probably why I was so familiar with Mr. Toad and you weren't. But yeah, I mean, it is, for me, nothing is better than to hear Bing Crosby. And of course, he narrates the story, so he is like, he's doing a one-man show, basically, of Sleepy Hollow. He's doing the voice of Brahm. He's doing just the narration. He's obviously not doing his voice. It's not like Katrina, but when Katrina's part comes up, he's narrating what she's doing.
Yeah, she doesn't ever talk.
Yeah. Excellent movie. Of course, from that time era, Disney Studios, just like at the peak of their animation,
yeah.
You know, with just that classic look. It's not very long. The Mr. Toad segment is longer of the two. The Ichabod segment is not very long, but it's catchy as all get out. It's you know, it's all music. It's Bing Crosby, of course, doing his thing. It moves
such
at a great
good
pace.
Animation.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, it's intense. I remember being as a kid in the part where, you know, he's leaving the party, the Van Tassel party, and he's got to go through the woods. He's got to make it to the bridge. That whole segment where he's like, you know, he's on gunpowder, and they're clop clop. Clop, 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 clop. You know, gunpowder's going so slow, and you're just thinking, as a kid, I was like, just go.
Why gunpowder's also sleeping.
Yeah, I said, why are you waiting for the Headless Horseman to show up? Just go full speed all the way. Or, you know, sleep in the Van Tassel's barn until morning. You just want him to, oh my gosh. But yeah, it's awesome because, you know, all the music in it, all the songs, it just enhances the story. You know, it's so much fun. It's when Brahm tells the story of the Headless Horseman at the Van Tassel party. It's such a catchy song, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, dun, and dun, Ichabod, dun. Yeah, dun. Ichabod just getting nervous, and the more nervous he gets, the more food he's shoveling in his mouth, of course.
Because he was always such a smooth character before that. Remember, he would be dancing with Katrina, and he would just slip his hand and get a piece of cake, and then slip it in his mouth whenever they'd turn around. I mean, he was everything, and then he lit the squire's cigarette when he bowed or something, doing all these smooth moves.
Well, even before that, you know, there's a part where Brahm is trying to beat up Ichabod. Ichabod doesn't even realize it. Like, Brahm is like, takes a flying leap at Ichabod to tackle him. Ichabod, like, bends over to tie his shoe, and Brahm flies over into, like, something, you know. And Brahm's trying to come at him, and Ichabod opens the gate for Katrina, and it hits Brahm, like, in the midsection. It's just, like, one thing after another where Brahm's trying to get the upper hand, and Ichabod, just clueless that he's even there, is defeating him. And then, of course, the women in Sleepy Hollow just are taken by Ichabod. Like, he's such a dork. They draw him to be, like, the typical Ichabod Crane, but I guess because he's Bing Crosby, you know, like, these women are just, like, falling left and right for him. Except Katrina.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, that's what's weird. I didn't realize this until I became an adult and I started watching it again. Katrina is just using Ichabod to make Brahm jealous.
Yeah.
Because, a spoiler alert, at the end, Katrina marries Brahm.
Yeah, that's why I like the Jeff Goldblum one, because she didn't do that.
I guess. But, you know, and I always thought, man, it was like, well, Meg Foster was a B in the Jeff Goldblum one, yet Katrina in the animated cartoon was, because she's just using Ichabod to make Brahm jealous. But yeah, it was awesome. Again, it's the whole story is told by Bing Crosby. There's some backup singers, and the only part of Ichabod's role that is not Bing Crosby is when he does like the yell, like the whoa, when he's running from the Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
That's done by some voice actor that Disney used. It's almost like they used that cry in several of the cartoons back then. Like, I think that same cry, if I'm not mistaken, is used for like the Goofy cartoons when Goofy does something goofy. I didn't mean to say it that way. That was actually a mistake. they would use that same kind of yell. So, yeah, and they use that yell. It's like the Wilhelm scream. You know what the Wilhelm scream is, Colleen?
No.
It's in every Indiana Jones movie. It's in every Star Wars movie. Mm. Is that...
Can't be original, huh?
Yeah, it's just look it up. I'm not going to attempt to do it because it's going to come out as bad as my Christopher Walken impression from earlier. But you can look up the Wilhelm scream on YouTube, and I'm sure it'll give you...
You know, it's funny that you say that because I have noticed there's a particular scream in Scream 2 that I feel like I hear often. But I wasn't hearing it until Scream 2.
It's possible that they use it in Scream 2 as kind of like a nod to...
Okay.
The Wilhelm.
And it may be the same thing. Can I say my favorite part of the cartoon?
Sure.
When Ichabod is on his way home and he's on gunpowder. And, of course, gunpowder in the cartoon, he's a workhorse. And he is just this big, dumpy, skinny. And when I say dumpy, I mean like dorky, dumpy. His head's always down. He's skinny. You know, his hip bones are just sticking out. Because apparently gunpowder is known for being an older horse, but he was like fast and furious and in his younger days.
He went from being Tigger to Eeyore.
Eeyore. That's a perfect example. So, and of course, when Ichabod is riding him, he still has the work around his neck.
The plow harness.
Yes. It's like, you couldn't have taken that off. Uh-huh. But anyway, so I think I know it's to the point where Ichabod's already scared and he's trying to get gunpowder, not necessarily to run, he's not at that point yet, but I think he's just wanting him to go, and so he's noticing that he's hearing his hoof clop, you know, hooves make the noise, the
clopping,
but he's not feeling the motion, and so then, because it's a close-up shot, and then it pans out, and gunpowder is actually, I think, sitting on something, sleeping, and what you're hearing are cattails, the wind is blowing them to make the galloping sounds, and oh man, it's just... I love little things like that in the cartoon.
Yeah, that's definitely my favorite. But I would have to say the Jeff Goldblum one, they're almost neck and neck, honestly.
Yeah.
For me. They're both very good. I probably would have never given the Jeff Goldblum one the time of day.
If
I even would have heard about it. You never even come across that. So I don't even know how I would have even been exposed to it. And as an adult, but until you started, you know, I was watching it with you, and I thought, yeah, it's good, it's very good.
And I love movies like that, and like Gargoyles is the same way, made for TV, to where instead of it showing on TV and they have to cut to a commercial, they just cut to a commercial mid sentence or mid frame, you know, something's going on, they just cut to commercial.
Yeah.
This, it gives you those breaks, those pauses in the movie to where you know it's a commercial break and then it comes back and you know it picked right back up where it was supposed to. You know, Gargoyles is the same way. I know it's made for TV, but I like movies like that because nowadays you're seeing movies and they're cutting the commercials and it's just such an odd time. It's annoying.
Yeah, it is annoying. Well, can I get my severed head rating?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know if you're done gabbing about it or not.
I'm not the one going on about Bernie Casey as a gargoyle.
I never said Bernie Casey.
What are you talking about gargoyles?
Okay, well, wasn't he a football player too? So
yeah.
Speaking of another football player
probably,
who was a good actor.
He probably met Dick Butkus on the field at some point.
Oh, yeah, they got an idea to play in this, you know, movies. Okay.
They would have played the same era, I believe. So
yeah,
it's possible.
Probably.
Oh, that would be awesome. Brom Bones versus Gargoyle. That's the team up I want to see. So I would probably go ahead and give this one easily 5 severed heads out of 5.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have to. It's my favorite of the Ichabod, of the Sleepy Hollow stories.
This has been a fun night.
Yeah, there you have it, folks. Our little take on the legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you've enjoyed this month-long Figments, you know, spookiest cases. We started
this has been fun.
And at first, this was fun doing our start out the month with our Lone Star Specters. Then we went
Urban Legends,
and then we visited the Amityville Horror House. And we're wrapping it up with the ghost story. The ghost.
Sleepy Hollow. Sorry.
Wow. We're ending with the ghost story to end all ghost stories. The legend of
Sleepy Hollow.
So, you have to ask yourself, listeners.
Wait, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Gosh, that was that. And if that sounded for real,
right? Okay, let's do this. Let's do it, Lethal Weapon style, on three. Now, on three, or one, two, three, and then no, on three. Okay, one, two, three.
Happy Halloween,
everybody! Really?
We just let it go. Okay.
So when you're at home and you're hearing the galloping of gunpowder, and you're hearing Dick Buckus bullying Ichabod Crane, and you're hearing Bing Crosby, you know, swooning ladies. That was pretty good. You have to ask yourself, are they real or are they figments? And good night, folks.
Good night, spooks.
Figments is a production of EdMed Art Studios and hosted by the Jedi Cole Universe. You can find us at www.jedicole.com and www.eddiemedina.com. Thank you for listening, and keep searching for the unknown.